ID, the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design.
Are humans evolving? What if you were told that more and more humans are growing an extra artery in our arms? A recent paper in the Journal of Anatomy claims to provide an example of microevolutionary changes in the human body. Several news outlets picked up the story with attention-grabbing headlines like "Evolution arms us with an extra artery," and "More humans are growing an extra artery in our arms," showing we're still evolving. Hello, I'm Eric Anderson, and today I'm joined by Dr. Howard Glicksman for a candid conversation about this recent research and what it shows, or doesn't show, about evolution. Dr. Glicksman practices palliative medicine and has been a longtime contributor to the debate over intelligent design and evolution, including through his series of articles at Evolution News, The Designed Body. Welcome, Howard.
Thanks for having me, Eric.
Howard, I want to approach things today a little differently than we usually do. I've done a little bit of research and have written briefly on this topic, and you've got a great medical background that's going to help us dive into some of the details. So rather than an interview format, I thought the two of us might just have more of a conversation together, brainstorm a little bit to help our listeners understand what's going on here.
That sounds good. Let's give it a shot.
So let me set the stage a little bit. Just last month, the paper came out in the Journal of Anatomy titled "Recent Increased Prevalence of the Human Median Artery of the Forearm, a Microevolutionary Change." The paper talked about an increase in the prevalence of the median artery in humans, and then a number of news outlets picked up on the story, touting this as evidence for ongoing evolution of humans. So from the medical side, maybe you can help us understand what we're talking about here. What is the median artery?
Well, I think I want to start with just saying, why do we need arteries in the first place compared to a unicellular organism, which gets its oxygen and sugar and whatever else needs from the water it lives in? And multicellular organisms like us, who have over, you know, trillions of cells, need to have organ systems to get these things, oxygen and sugar. So, you know, we have a respiratory system and we have a gastrointestinal system, you know, to get the sugar. And for the embryo and the fetus, those systems aren't developed. So they're being provided by the placenta from the mother. But you also need a cardiovascular system to pump the blood that contains these chemicals to the tissues. And so the embryo has to form its own blood vessels. And this is like, of course, it forms the heart and arteries. And of course, the artery is useless by itself because like the airways and the lungs, which carry air, you need the alveoli to actually do a gas exchange. So the artery is just a conduit for the blood to get to the tissues. And once they're there, you have to have the capillaries, which is actually where the exchange occurs. So you basically need the whole system in place, not just an artery, but capillaries as well. Now, with regard to the median artery, what we're told is that about 6 or 7 weeks of life, that's where the arm starts to form. Now, remember, the embryo at this point is only about an inch long. So the arm is maybe, what, a quarter of an inch or less. Mm-hmm. So the main artery, called the brachial artery, that gets into the arm, starts to split into the radial, ulnar, and something called the common interosseous artery. That's the artery that goes down between the bones. And the median artery apparently comes off either the ulnar or the common interosseous artery or one of its branches. And apparently up until about 8 weeks, this median artery provides most of the blood supply of the arm. So the median artery is there right from the beginning.
Right. Okay. So the first thing I think we need to understand is that the median artery is a perfectly normal part of the anatomy of the growing fetus and a perfectly normal part of embryo development. So whatever's going on to program or regulate or control this process is already there, up and running, and responsible for constructing the median artery in the first place. So, you know, this allows us, I guess, to start identifying a little bit of misinformation in the news stories already, at least, you know, when they have headlines like "More humans are growing an extra artery," especially since that's already part of the normal embryonic development. When you saw some of these news headlines and stories, Howard, what was your first impression?
Well, you know, I without reading it, I wasn't really sure. I think one of the, you know, I've sort of looked into this a little more. One of the problems I had or misunderstandings I had until I researched this further was that the way this sounds is like the brachial artery goes into the median artery. Okay, because they don't really get into details about this. And so you have the median artery supplying blood to the forearm with nothing else around, okay? And then somehow these other vessels form and the median artery is supposed to go away. Yet, when you actually look at the anatomy, you see that the median artery is coming off the ulnar artery, or it's coming off the interosseous artery, not coming directly from the brachial artery. So this is very confusing. Mm-hmm. And so immediately I had a question about, you know, what's really going on here. And like you said, it's part of the embryo and fetal development. So it seemed to be a stretch to me.
Yeah. I was looking at a drawing, I guess, of the forearm just this morning. And I mean, there's of course, the radial artery and the ulnar artery and the median artery, which we're talking about and focusing on today. But as you mentioned, there's the common interosseous artery, which just means between the bones, right? The recurrent interosseous artery, the posterior interosseous artery, the anterior interosseous artery, you know, the dorsal carpal brachial artery. I mean, there's a whole system here, at least once the once you get into adulthood, right, where you've got a large limb, there's a whole system here that has to be in place to supply blood and the nutrients to the forearm and to the hand.
Yeah, it may be an idea for me just to explain what their definition of a persistent median artery is, okay?
Yeah,
it's basically when you have what's called a sizable vessel that supplies blood to the forearm or the hand beyond the wrist. So, you know, the story is that as the arm develops, the radial and ulnar artery expand their territory, basically taking over the blood supply of the arm from the median artery, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this is supposed to start about the eighth week. This is what we're told. And then the median artery usually regresses then. I mean, we're told it's 8 weeks. And if it goes beyond 8 weeks, you know, there's some sort of defect or certainly seen in an adult, because this study was done on autopsies. These are people, if I'm not mistaken, they were Australian people that are of European descent between the ages of, I think, 50 and 80 or something. And this is where they figured at autopsy, they analyzed how many of them had a prominent median artery. Because if you read, you see that the median artery can be a very small vessel just below the elbow, providing blood supply to the median nerve. So it's not like the median artery doesn't exist at all. It's just that it's not prominent. It's not really doing a lot in the arm. The main thing is the radial and the ulnar arteries, and of course, these interosseous arteries. And the point being that this median artery is prominent in the wrist and becomes a big issue largely medically, because it can be associated with nerve entrapment syndromes, specifically carpal tunnel syndrome. So, you know, it's very tight in that wrist area. And if your artery, you've got a median artery going through there where it's not sort of not supposed to be, quote unquote, then it increases the risk of these type of problems.
Yeah. And I noticed in the article, they acknowledged that there was even some difficulty in identifying whether there was a median artery in some cases, and, you know, question of whether the median artery had existed all the way down into the hand, whether it had partially regressed, whether it had fully regressed. And there was a little bit of a judgment call there in terms of identifying as they looked at these cadavers.
Right. And that's why, I don't know if you want to get into the data later on, but the point being that, if I recall, the study was that they determined from the nowadays that the incidence of this persistent median artery in adults is somewhere around 30 or 35%. Now, I'm not a statistician, but basically on the stuff I looked at, it wasn't necessarily in their article, but even the ones in their article, you have an incidence anywhere from like 1% to, you know, 60%, okay? And somehow they come up with 30%, and they also do this on actually 78 arms, which would mean maybe 39 or 42 people or whatever. And then they extrapolate that to say, not only is this an evolutionary change, but we predict if it's at 30% now, then the year 2100, it's going to be 100%. Everybody is going to have a persistent median artery, meaning that, you know, you're using a population of like, you know, 78 arms and applying it to 14 billion arms within 100 years. It just seems a little bit of a stretch there.
Right. Yeah, I was looking at the chart just now, as you mentioned that in their article, and there's a vast range of prevalence, it looks like, depending on the study and depending on who's looking at this. Is there a chance that part of this prevalence is simply a natural variation, we might call it, in the median artery persisting into adulthood?
Well, I think that's how the rest of the medical profession sees it. I would want to add also at this point that the determination that there's been a change means that they're looking at the data from the mid-1800s, which has to be suspect, because you don't know how they're deciding what the median, which median arteries are really present or not, or what their definition is. And you can see that our people here, these gentlemen or these researchers have made this determination you have a 30-35%. I don't know what the data is from the mid-1800s, how they came up with 10%. And of course, you don't know what it was before. So it could have been, you know, 20% back in the 1700s and, you know, 25% in the 1400s, and it's actually fluctuating. I mean, this is sort of total guesswork, really.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it is seen as a variant. I think the issue is And how they come up with their conclusion is based on what they say is the cause of this. Here's the question. Why is this persisting? Okay.
Yeah.
That's the key thing, because they come out and they actually say that the mechanism for this change is genetic. And they say the mechanism for the regression of the median artery is initiated and regulated by specific genes. Therefore, the persistence of the median artery into adulthood indicates the failure of the expression of these genes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really when I sat up and took notice, because this is where I really ran into trouble, Eric. You know, what they said didn't make sense to me. All right. You know, what specific genes initiate and regulate the regression of the median artery, and how do they do it? I mean, you know, how do you close down an artery that's supplying blood to tissue without killing the tissue? I mean, that was my problem. And, you know, I could understand how specific genes could regulate the formation of blood vessels. Okay. You know, but based on what I've read, you know, they don't just do it on their own. They do it based on stimulation by mechanical and metabolic forces like low oxygen.
Yeah. So talk us through a little bit what happens in terms of initiating the formation of something like an artery. What's going on there, and how do arteries work together? Like I said, there's a whole system in there, maybe not at the point of 8 weeks, but certainly into adulthood, where we're talking about the persistence of this median artery. There's a whole system of arteries in there that are working in the forearm and the hand. And you and I've talked a little bit in the past about the ability of arteries to take over for others. Talk us through that a little bit.
Well, yeah, I think if you look up the formation of the vasculature right from the embryo, that's what's going on. The low oxygen tension is turning on these cells, modulated by gene regulation, that these cells then start forming vascular blood vessels and capillaries. Okay, but the key thing, as we've discussed, is that the formation of blood vessels isn't a one and done deal. You know, it's a lifelong ongoing process that adapts to what's going on in your body. So I give you a couple of examples, and we'll touch on this, but give some people a better understanding. So when you cut yourself, you know, this disrupts tissues, including the blood vessels involved, and the body clots things off to stop the bleeding. But then the injury and the associated low oxygen in the region stimulates the stem cells nearby to start healing the wound by forming new tissue. All right. And of course, to do that, it has to form new blood vessels to provide the oxygen and sugar, whatever else it needs. So, you know, that's sort of similar to what's going on with the formation of, as tissue forms, there's lack of oxygen there. They need a blood supply that stimulates the cells to form into blood vessels.
Yeah, that's something that I think most of us, you know, lay people not in the medical profession, don't necessarily think about. I mean, you have a serious injury or you cut yourself, like you say. Great, it heals. You know, it just sort of happens. It's the way we think about
right.
it. We don't think about, wow, okay, so I have to have, you know, if not a new artery, I've got to have some new capillaries that are forming in that region, right, to be able to take the blood and the nutrients where they need to go.
Exactly. Not only that, but then if you should read something about, you know, like wound healing, because not only do you have the blood vessels, but then the other cells nearby then form into the new actual skin, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And nobody really understands that, but this is so important for, say, cancer therapy, because when the cancer cells start to grow, they start forming their own blood vessels. So you want to understand how that works so you can block it with medication. So
interesting.
This is the reason why this has become, I think, so big. I mean, besides trying to not only understanding, you know, human development from the embryo onwards, but there's still a lot to learn. And so there's one other aspect. So that's the actual formation, okay? But
mm-hmm.
let's talk about a person that's living and they're moving around and doing things. There's something what's called collateral blood flow, all right? And we see this especially in people with heart disease due to hardening of the arteries, okay? So a person may have their first episode, 50-year-old guy, first episode of some chest pain, sounds like angina, could be his heart, goes to the heart doctor, and they say, you know, we need to do a heart catheterization. So they put a catheter up and they inject some dye in the artery so they can actually see the arteries, right? And after the test, the doctor comes to them and says, you know, you got three main arteries that supply blood to your heart muscle, but one of them is totally blocked, 100% blocked. And of course, his reaction is going to be, well, this is the first chest pain I've ever had. I've never had chest pain before. I've never had a heart attack. I've never had any breathing problems. And the doctor says, yeah, you know, your ventricle is working fine. It's never been injured. It's fine. Well, how did this happen? Well, because the artery closed off so slowly that the other two arteries were able to take over its territory. The gradual drop in oxygen in the region supplied by this particular artery, which was, you know, 85, 90, 95, 99% blocked, as that continued, it stimulated the nearby arteries to branch out further to cover the slack. And this is what's called collateralization of blood flow. So when I saw this, their mechanism for how this median artery is supposed to close, you know, they're suggesting, I thought to myself, was like, this regression of the median artery is really the opposite of collateral blood flow, okay? Instead of forming new blood vessels, one that already exists and is doing its job has to regress. You know, maybe I'm wrong here, but it seems to me that by saying it's a gene regulation, it seems to sort of dismantle the artery. And it's usually done this by 8 weeks of intrauterine life. But the question is, which genes and, you know, how does it do it?
Yeah, those are some really great questions you've raised. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for joining me today, Howard, for this conversation. I'll definitely have you back so that we can continue to talk about the implications of this research and what it may or may not contribute to our understanding of evolution.
Well, thanks for having me, Eric. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of ID the Future. If you find this podcast a valuable contribution to the conversation about origins, please consider helping us spread the word by giving the show a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice. Until next time, I'm Eric Anderson.
Visit us at idthefuture.com and intelligentdesign.org. This program is copyright Discovery Institute and recorded by Center for Science and Culture.